Gopa, Gopina, Sham, Kundarad, Hakundi, Girigovan, Kija, Grantarad, Shimad, Bhagavatam, Gold of Himanandi. All glories to the Ascended Bodhisattva. All glories to the Ascended Bodhisattva. All glories to the Ascended Bodhisattva. All glories to the Lotus Eater, Sisi, Guru, and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. We're concluding second canto, 10th chapter, verse 51. That's 10th chapter, and we're beginning the third canto, first chapter, verses 1 and 2. Three verses, I'll chant the Sanskrit on the first two, and we'll collectively chant the third verse.
Suto vacha rajna parikshita prishto yad avochan mahamunihi tadvo vidya shishrinuta rajna prashan usharata.
Translation. Sri Suta Goswami explained, I shall now explain to you the various subjects explained by the great sage in answer to King Parikrit's inquiries. Please hear them attentively. Any question that is put forward may be answered by quoting the authority, and that satisfies the saner section. That is the system even in the law court. The best lawyer gives evidence from the past judgment of the court without taking much trouble to establish his case. This is called the paramparar system, and learned authorities follow it without manufacturing rubbish interpretations. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Radha Govinda Sagakadana Parama. Let us obey the Supreme Lord, whose hand is in everything without exception. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the chapter entitled Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 1st chapter, verse 1 and 2. Shri Suko Vacha Eva Mitakpura Prishto Maitreyo Bhagavan Kila Chatravanam Pavishtena Tvakva Swagri Hamridhimat. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, after renouncing his prosperous home and entering the forest, King Vidura, the great devotee, asked this question of his grace, Maitreya Rishi. And now we'll chant together this verse. Yad
Va
Ayam Mantra Krid
Vo
Bhagavan
Akileshwara
Puravindra
Griham
Pitva
Pravivesat
Mashat
Kritam
Yadvahayam mantra kridvo
Bhagavan
Alikeshvara
Puravindra
Griham Hitva Pravivesat Mashat Kritam Yadvahayam
mantra kridvo
Bhagavan Akileshwara Puravindra Griham Hitva Pravivesat Mashat Kritam. Please chant. Is there to say?
What else is there to say?
Ayam.
Sri Krishna.
Mantrakrit.
Minister.
Va.
Va.
You people.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
Akila
Ishwara.
Akila
Ishwara. Lord of everything. Pauravinda.
Duryodhana.
Griham.
House.
Giving up. Pravivesha. Entered.
Atmasat.
Identify with oneself.
Identify with oneself.
Pritam.
So accepted.
Translation. What else is there to say about the residential house of the Pandavas? Sri Krishna, the Lord of everything, acted as your minister. He used to enter that house as if it were his own, and he did not take any care of Duryodhana's house. Poor Srila Prabhupada. According to the Gaudiya Achintya Bhedavada Tattva philosophy, anything which satisfies the senses of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, is also Sri Krishna. For example, Sri Vrindavan Dham is non-different from Sri Krishna, Tad Dhamma Vrindavan, because at Vrindavan, the Lord enjoys the transcendental bliss of his internal potency. Similarly, the house of the Pandavas was also the source of transcendental bliss for the Lord. It is mentioned here that the Lord identified the house with his own self. Thus, the house of the Pandavas was as good as Vrindavan. And Vidur should not have given up that place of transcendental bliss. Therefore, the reason for his quitting the house was not exactly family misunderstanding. Rather, Vidur took the opportunity to meet Rishi Maitreya and discuss transcendental knowledge. For a saintly person like Vidur, any disturbance due to worldly affairs is insignificant. Such disturbances, however, are sometimes favorable for higher realization, and therefore Vidur took advantage of a family misunderstanding in order to meet Maitreya Rishi. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pandum Lamjayate Girin Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dimitavina Avancha Kapatirubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaheva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasana Gaur Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisance to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss, because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. Kind of a peculiar way to start this, but there was a conversation recently with a famous musician that passed away, Tony Bennett by name, and he was asked about, before he goes on stage, and it was another musician he was giving some counsel to who was saying, I always feel so nervous and awkward. He said, that's good. He said, that means it shows you care. So I always, when I sit down in front of such an august assembly as we have here in Alachua, I always feel like, oh, boy, I'm gonna blow it this time. So, by your blessings, I hope to be able to speak a few words that will be pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and the assembled Vaishnavas. So the last time I spoke on this chapter, we covered and established as a fact that this chapter title, Srimad Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions, is indeed the foundation of our devotional principles. And here in this final verse, the conclusion of this point of view, not a point of view, the conclusion of this fact is that Sukadeva Goswami is indicating more will come. This is just, you know, we're at the tip of the iceberg. We're just getting started here. More nectar, more mercy, more bliss. This is the process of devotional service, and it's ever increasing. The spiritual nature has no limit. Now, this is very difficult for our linear mind to grasp because we live in a very restrictive world. What we can physically do, what we can mentally do, what resources we have available to us, this is all completely controlled and tightly restricted. I mean, in the spiritual world, in Vrindavan, under the direction of Brenda Davy, Purnamasi, they get together and decide, okay, today the pastimes are going to be such and such. And there's these storehouses all over Vrindavan in different places. And all the articles they need to enact, whatever that day's pastime is, they all come out of these places. Completely, whatever is wanted for facilitating the pastimes of Krishna is there. All right, just take it. Our life is not like that. Our living within this structured, restricted material world is not like that. So when we hear from such a great personality as Sukadeva Goswami, the war is coming, we should be a little enthused, a little bit excited. You know? It's your birthday and somebody brings you 3 or 4 presents, you're like, wow, this is great. And then somebody, oh no, wait, there's more. There's more presents coming. You get like excited. Okay, great, what's next? You know? So this is the way we should approach the conclusion. Now, conclusion usually means, oh, it's over. You know, the conclusion of a lecture, the conclusion of a concert, the conclusion of a great book you're reading. Oh, it's finished. That's not the case with Srimad Bhagavatam. The conclusion of one chapter is simply the entrance to another whole world of katha. So this is not only possible due to the highly sublime nature of the subject itself, but it is due to the genuine interest and eagerness of the hearers. Hearers that want to hear more, and speakers that want to speak more. Now, we generally, within our ISKCON society, do not have any problem with speakers that want to speak more. We generally have just said, oh, okay, can you hold it at 7 hours, please? You know? So the enthusiasm to want to speak and the enthusiasm to hear, this is what we hanker for. Now, in the previous two verses, verses 49 and 50, where Shanaka Rishi is requesting that more, he's putting the idea out. He's the hearer. He's saying, as we can remember from one famous pastime, Aniyor, Aniyor, give me more, give me more. Govardhana's request, Govardhana's had unlimited foodstuffs brought before him. We can't even imagine stacks of chapatis the entire distance of the Aniyor landscape there. And all of this is consumed by Giriraj. He says, more, you have something else? So the sages in this way, being all of you as well, they want more, they want more, they want more. This is the greedy nature of devotional life. If in, I'll just use an example. In the break room where I work, there's always donuts for everybody. Now, if somebody goes in and eats 6, I don't eat any, thank you very much, unless somebody wants to send them from the donut plant. So if somebody wants to go in and eat 6 or 8 donuts, or just pick the whole box up and take it back to their dick, it's like, oh, come on. You're so greedy. Can't you think of other people? In the devotional context of hearing and chanting, that greediness is a good quality. I want to hear more. I want to hear more. So this is the indication at the close of this second canto that there's more coming. And this level of enthusiasm, this level of eagerness is what we need to be able to hear from the Bhagavatam. Oh, we have so much enthusiasm and eagerness to hear from so many things. You know, there's endless news outlets and mundane topics and, you know, so many things, you know. And it's all there. And we usually have very enthusiastic nature to want to hear about this stuff. But the Bhagavatam should be a real source of enthusiasm to hear. Either the book or the person, either hearing it from the representative or reading the book itself. After all, just to put an exact point on it, the Bhagavatam is our only salvation. The real salvation we have in this world. Now, in a lecture in LA in 74, Prabhupada said, this is the Bhagavat. There is no comparison. There is no literature throughout the universe like Srimad Bhagavatam. Just in case there's any question of life on other planets, okay, whatever they got there, it doesn't compare to the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada continues, there is no comparison. There is no competition. Every word is for the good of human society. Every word. Each and every word, just to put an emphasis on that in case it wasn't there. So all that's needed is our eagerness. The Bhagavatam itself is sublime. The Bhagavatam itself has what we need. We need to manifest the eagerness to want to hear. We need to manifest the enthusiasm to want to listen. Now, in this verse, 51, Sutta assures Sonika, yes, 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 I'll speak on this subject. I'll speak on it. Don't worry. Yep, I'm going to cover it all, you know. And the actual word used here is Shrinuta. Shrinuta, the exact translation means to hear. But Prabhupada expands the foundation of how we should hear. And he does that in the word-for-word translation. Please hear attentively. Attentively. Attentive hearing, as we all know, this is a manner of showing the most respect and focus to the person speaking. There's that well-known joke, you know, my wife says I only have two faults. One is that I don't listen to her, and the other, I can't remember the other one. Thank you, okay. But this is not the kind of mood of hearing that's taking place in the Bhagavatam process of Shravana and Kirtana. Attentiveness, because that attention means that we're taking something and examining it and applying it to ourselves. This is the purpose of the Bhagavatam, not just to, you know, be some another book on the bookshelf, you know, but to be something that as we study it, as we hear from it, we can apply it to ourselves. Now, in this purport to this last book, Prabhupada takes it even a little bit deeper. And he says, any question, he doesn't say the question, but any question that is put forward may be answered by quoting authority. This is our process. And this is applicable even in the mundane world. Here again, where I work, there are systems that things are done in a certain way. Why is it done that way? Because we have this thing at work called the planogram. We call it the mighty POG. P-O-G. And the planogram dictates how things are put into a bay. And it must be followed. It is the authority. And if one wants to transgress the authority, there's a whole method one has to go through. Tari knows what I'm talking about. So this is the principle of the Bhagavatam. That any question of the Bhagavatam can be answered by quoting the previous authorities. And this allows one to answer in a manner that gives us confidence. What's my ability to, you know, as I often say, I'm just a pasty-faced boy from the Midwest. What do I know? You know? I mean, no, but I was listening to, I sent this to my daughter. I was listening to a lecture yesterday, and Prabhupada was saying about, you know, if we're not successful in the process of devotional service, we take our next birth in a good Brahmin family or a family of rich people like that, you know. So, and I was thinking, you know, that's certainly not my qualification, you know. I mean, a pious religious family, yeah, but, you know, Brahmin family, you know, rich people, no, that wasn't, you know. But somehow or another, we're there. So, if we're able to answer on the strength of authority, we get that confidence to speak. We've heard from Srila Prabhupada, either directly by his speaking or by reading his books, and that gives us the confidence as his representative to sit and speak firmly, with conviction. Otherwise, you know, I mean, my opinion, your opinion, his opinion, anybody's opinion, you sit down here and debate all day. All you gotta do is go to the internet and see that going on. Back and forth, it's endless. But if we base our question, our answer to questions on authorities, then that gives us. And it's because, as Prabhupada described his own abilities, I have not created anything new. I'm simply passing on what my spiritual master has given to me. As he says in this purport, this is the Paramparar system. This is the manner in which we relay spiritual knowledge. It comes to us, we take it as is, and we give it. The time, place, and circumstance might adapt a little, you know, whatever, but the foundational principle is not there. But Prabhupada doesn't stop there. No. He states that such answering will satisfy the saner section of humanity. Now, that saner section of humanity is getting smaller and smaller and smaller all the time. I mean, we see this, that there's just, you know, very little sanity left in the world. What's that common phrase we use at work? Common sense isn't so common, apparently. So sanity is apparently not so prominent either. It's a symptom of Kali Yuga. It's a symptom of Kali Yuga, and where we find particularly present in our digital world that anybody will say anything and not care if it's supported by Shastra or by common sense or by practical understanding, you know, simply for the sake of arguing and debating with others. And we've all seen it, unlimited paragraphs going back and forth and back and forth of people arguing with each other. No desire to resolve a question, no desire to present some foundational philosophical principle, but simply for the sake of arguing. Arguing for the sake of arguing, as my father used to say. So Prabhupada points out, this is not the system. And then he gives the example of a lawyer. We have two prominent lawyers in our assembly here today that know that when you go to present a case, you have to have the previous cases. And it's interesting, Prabhupada, what's his exact word on this? I was taken by this. The best lawyer gives advice from past judgments of the court without taking much trouble to establish the case. It's not a difficulty. He doesn't have to rethink everything because the evidence is there. Previously, it was decided like this. In this case, similarities there. Your Honor, here's the conclusion. So it doesn't take a lot of, you know, brain power. I mean, it takes brain power to, you know, do these things, but to research this thing, it's very simply found right there. And by this presentation, it moves away from the field of simple debating arguments. This is how we establish the truth in Krishna consciousness. Now, then, Prabhupada throws in four words here, really powerful words, without manufacturing rubbish interpretations. Now, this rubbish is a British word. You know, my granddaughters, when they were visiting, they're Australian, as you all know, and Grandpa, where's the rubbish bin? So, you know, this isn't a word we use in America, so we call it the trash. You know, but rubbish has a much better, you know, dismissive sound to it. You know, without manufacturing rubbish interpretations. Such manufacturing, it's nothing more than mental gymnastics, you know? What's a prophet said, in order to be a good Muni, this is in the Bhagavad Gita, in order to be a good Muni, one has to create their own point of view, a new particular angle on something. So this process of manufacturing rubbish interpretations is not necessary in the process of devotional service. It's not necessary. And this avoiding of that, here again, gives us the confidence to speak from the Bhagavatam, because we're representing the previous acharyas. We're representing our spiritual master. We're representing the entire parampara. Sukadeva Goswami is mentioned here. He's one of the 12 Mahajans. Different lecture I was listening to, Prabhupada lists off all the Mahajans. Interestingly, the number of them that are strict renunciates is lesser than the number that are in the household ashram. So being a grihastha is not an impediment to one's being Krishna conscious. Anyway, this is the manner in which Prabhupada brings the second canto to a conclusion. That's always such a joyous thing when we see it. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports to such and such. Because we know it means, okay, we've progressed past there, now we're moving on to here. This is the way we want our reading to be, that, okay, well, I read, you know, this much today, and now I've got this much I'm going to read tomorrow. So whenever we see that line, thus concludes the Bhaktivedanta purports, we know that we're moving further along in our study of the Bhagavatam. So, Now, opening with this third canto, we have Sukadeva Goswami indicating that what is to follow will be the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. This is where the Bhagavatam starts to expand out a bit. This is where we start to bring in other personalities' conversations, other individual acharyas within the Bhagavatam structure that are supportive and foundational themselves in the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. And this is where Vidura and Maitreya are there. This is the expanded input for the Bhagavatam philosophy. Now, with this one sentence at the beginning of this first verse, Sukadeva Goswami, as we would say in the modern vernacular, wets our whistle to go a little further. He says, after renouncing his prosperous home and entering the forest, King Vidura, the great devotee, asked this question of His Grace Maitreya Rishi. Now, if we look at that statement, that verse, we have to ask ourselves, wait a minute. Vidura left his home? I mean, he was like one of the, you know, kind of junior princes, you could say, you know? He had, you know, all facility in the palace. Everything was very comfortable. He didn't have to worry for anything. Could I have some mangoes? Could I have some, you know, whatever? Right there, you know, this was the nature of palace life. And he gave all that up when he went to the forest? How did all this come about? What prompted this? You know, if you hear that someone has given everything up and moved on to a different place, you know, or you know, whatever, the natural question is, why did this happen? So, in this manner, this verse, with its question marks inherently incorporated in the structure of the verse itself, it sets the stage for the manner in which the rest of this chapter will fully inform us about Vidura and his activities and his eventual departure from the royal kingdom with all of its comforts and everything. Now, not to get too ahead of things, because this chapter expands out on this, but we all know Vidura's history. You know, it was a Dasiputra. By the arrangement of Satyavati, the mother of Vyasadeva, the function of Niyoga, or the union with the sister-in-laws after the death of the husband, took place. Satyavati requested Vyas, as her son, you please fulfill this. This is one of those things that's prohibited in Kali Yuga. I mean, you had to be really, I mean, Vyasadeva, okay, you can't get much higher than that, so he could do it. So the three girls, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika, of course, Amba didn't come and get involved in this whole thing. She declined the marriage with Vichitravirya. And then the other two were married, and then Vichitravirya died, of course, and Satyavati requested Vyasadeva to come forward and give union. And we know the story very well. The first one was like, oh, we're gonna, he's so horrible. I mean, you know. In the process of union, attraction, and making oneself appear nicely, this is all part of the package, you know. This is what the entire fashion and cosmetology industry is based on, you know. Here I am. You want some of this? So that's not the move of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva has been in the forest performing austerities and fasting. He's got dreadlocks and, you know, I mean, he bathes, but it's not like he bathes and then puts some face cream on, a little deodorant, some perfume, you know, no, it's just, you know, basic stuff. So it wasn't exactly the most, like, attractive partner in this process of yoga. So Ambika closes his eyes, of course we know there's, you know, Pandu, Dhritarashtra is born. And then Ambalika, when she saw him, she was shocked. You know how sometimes you're shocked by something, you become a little pale, you lose your color. And so, of course, then Pandu was born, he was quite anemic and pale like that. So, you know, there was the third attempt. And Ambalika sent her maidservant, who's indicated to be Parishrami. Parshrami, being a maidservant, had a natural mood of service. Very attentively, and very devotedly, and very submissively, and very cooperatively performed this Niyoga union with Vyasadeva. However, Vyasadeva is going to fool. Yeah, I know you're not Ambika. So anyway, he told his mother, he said, okay, it happened, it was successful, but this was a maidservant. This wasn't one of the princesses. So, and by the way, don't call me for this again. Disappears. So, I mean, that story itself could take an entire class, but we'll just cut to the punchline there and then let the rest of the chapter expand on that. So, as the son of a maidservant, Dasipuja, Vidura had access to all the royal palace facilities, all of its opulences. Everything was afforded to him because he was in the royal line, so to speak. But because he was not directly from the king and queen or prince and princess, whatever you know the particular was, he did not have lineage access to the throne itself. So kind of part of the court. You know, we see this a lot in the Middle Ages. If you're, a fan of or interested or study this type of history, the monarchy throughout Europe in the Middle Ages, and all you see this that there were a lot of these kind of things going on. And there'd be somebody in the court was like, all right, anyway, they're here, but you know, they're not really here. They're part of the family, but they're not really like that, you know. So, and Prabhupada mentions this was this happened because whenever a girl was married. To make her feel more comfortable, she wasn't just sent off, okay, go marry that family, you know, go on the other side of the world and live with someone else, and you know. But instead, so many dasis, servants, went with her, friends, associates. They were part of the package deal, so to speak. So she didn't end up going alone. She went with so many associates. And undoubtedly, due to the nature of the world being what it is, there would be some union between the king or the prince or whatever, and some of these girls. And so this is, you know, not an uncommon process, Prabhupada mentions. And these Dasiputras were given facility, but not access to the throne. They were never going to be kings. So in due course, as we will see in this chapter, Vidura renounces all this palatial life. And he goes into the forest. And while in the forest, he hears from Maitreya. I looked at this and I thought, in a limited sense, this is not like unlike what many of us did when we came to Prabhupada's shelter. You know? In our youth, we came to take shelter of Prabhupada and we renounced our homes, we renounced our families, we renounced our educations, our businesses, if anybody had businesses. Most of us didn't have any businesses, or at least not ones that were above board that could be spoken about. Well, as I was talking with someone the other day, in my sage study group, we were discussing Prabhupada and his previous activities as a pharmaceutical representative and manufacturer and all. And I told the story that Prabhupada tells that, or one of the devotees tells that in the early days, Prabhupada asked him, so what do you do? He said, oh, I sell drugs. Prabhupada said, oh yes, I used to sell drugs also. So, you know, the business we had may not have been so above board, but at any rate, we renounced all of that and simply sat and heard endlessly from Srila Prabhupada. Now, by no means are we on the level of Vidura, but there is a bit of a similarity. You know, our background is quite questionable. Vidura's background was clear, but it was questionable. And in due course, Vidura gave up all those comforts to take shelter of Maitreya. Similarly, as I mentioned, you've given up so many things, you know. Not necessarily, you know, the standard to follow at all times and circumstances, but it was the necessity for Prabhupada's preaching movement at that time to establish a foundation and spread Krishna consciousness widely. And we enthusiastically jumped in. So this is the indication from Sukadeva Goswami as to what's going to take place. You know, this conversation of about Vidura leaving home. Now, in the second verse here, Sukadeva Goswami is reflecting. It's not a question per se that, can you tell me? It's a rhetorical question. It's a question of reflection. What can be said about the house of the Pandavas? Krishna was there. As we would also say in our modern vernacular, does it get any better than this? You know, I mean, this is the This is the type of reflective, internal looking at situations that even great acharyas do. Just being amazed at a simple thing like, you know, the house of the Pandavas, Krishna lived there. You know, sometimes you go somewhere. I remember, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I remember when my daughter Manjula was quite little, and she and I had gone over to Ambarish and Swaha's to do some service over there. I was helping him with something. And she had to go and use the bathroom, and she came back and she said, "Daddy, their bathroom's like, wow." And I said, "Manju, you know those cars you see, Ford?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "That's them." She was like, "Oh." So, you know, this understanding of, wow, oh, that's what's going on here? That's who lives here? So this is how Sukadeva Goswami is reflecting. What can you say Krishna lived there? There was nothing any better. You know, and then he reflects on it. And why would Sukadeva Goswami reflect on this fact? We have to ask ourselves that, because this first section of this chapter is different types of questions. And so we might ask, why would he reflect? Because he appreciated that simply by Krishna being present, that place became non-different than Vrindavan. Non-different than Vrindavan. Now, this is a very important instruction for us. Now, we should take each verse of the Bhagavatam as an instruction. We should embrace what can I apply from this to my own life. And in this verse, Sukadeva Goswami's amazement at Krishna residing in the house of the Pandavas is because he saw that that made the home of the Pandavas, the palace of the Pandavas, whatever, none different than Vrindavan. We want our homes to be like Vrindavan. You know, we spend so much time and money and effort arranging tickets and housing facility and everything to go to Vrindavan. We can make our home Vrindavan. We want to be in Vrindavan consciousness. You know, we want to reside in Govardhan. Govardhana may be Shikam, may be Shikam. So, you know, we have to have Krishna present to make that happen. Present in our words, present in our thinking, present in his deity form, present in our home in every way. Prabhupada said, in the home of a Vaishnava, nobody eats anything until it's offered to the Lord. There's that famous story of Bhaktisiddhanta, we all know, with the mango, and Bhaktivinoda bringing it in. No, this is for the deity, you know. Oh, what a wretched person. 7 years old. Oh, what a wretched person. I'll never eat mango the rest of my life. Because it was understood that the home is Krishna's place. Vrindavan is Krishna's place. This is the Prabhupada says that every householder's home must have the deity in it. Because by having the deity, the house becomes, instead of a place for sense gratification, griha, it becomes a place where Krishna is residing and being served. So this is the important factor of having deity worship in every householder's home. And this presence of Krishna in that way, particularly in his deity form, gives us a focus. What we can do, what we can't do, how we should serve, what we should eat, what we can't eat. You know, our neighbor the other day gave some very nice pesto that she made fresh to my wife and I. First thing we did was garlic. Oh, that's unfortunate. You know, why? Oh, because we don't eat garlic. Why? Because Krishna doesn't eat garlic. Oh, Prabhupada said many times, it's not that we're vegetarians. We don't eat these things because Krishna doesn't eat them. So this is one of the amazing and unique qualities that we find here in our Alachua community. So many deity forms of the Lord throughout the entire community. I remember there was a time back like, I don't know, a couple of decades ago, we had like a weekly thing where we would gather a group of devotees and go on pilgrimage to different devotees' houses and take darshan of their deities. I think it was on a Saturday. We used to, you know, get a couple of vans and drive like that. You know, we had the, if I remember it correctly, the community was divided out into different forests, you know. And I mean, some of you that have been here as long as me or longer will remember this, you know, and go to this place and that place. And in this way, take darshan of the beautiful service. And in some cases, very rare deity forms that are present in our community. And, you know, very enthusiastically served. You know, so this is how we make our home Vrindavan, by injecting Krishna. Prabhupada said so many times, it's not that you have to change anything, you just have to inject Krishna. And we have to give up a couple of things. What was it Prabhupada said? 5 things. So, you know, those 5 things, and then after that, just be Krishna conscious. So, yeah. Now, regarding this being present by word as a way to have Krishna in our home, in the same lecture I was mentioning, I was listening to, Prabhupada uses the phrase, Hari Lilamrita Vacha. In one's life, there should be drinking the nectar of Krishna Katha. There are so many different reading groups within our community. I know my wife's got a couple of reading groups she goes to, and then I know Station MP have these reading groups, and yeah, I mean, there's just so many endless devotees who have reading groups in their home. And why is that? Because it is Hari Lilamrita Vacha. Vacha, meaning words spoken about Hari Lilamrita, the nectarine pastimes of Lord Krishna. And this is what we want to absorb ourselves in. This is how we want to fill our time, you know. And by this action, any one of these ways, but particularly this Hari Lilamrita Vacha, this will make our home Krishna conscious. This will, you know, remove the principle of sense gratification and make the principle that of having Krishna present, you know. This is the purpose of Grihastha life, you know, is not, you know, I mean, it may be required in our Grihastha ashram. We have to work and make some money and, you know, take care of responsibilities and so on and so on and so on. But the purpose is to establish a Krishna conscious home. The purpose is to raise Krishna conscious children. The purpose is to be Krishna conscious in that environment. Now, in both the verse and the purport to this second verse in this first chapter, it's very essential that it's mentioned what Krishna's thinking is. Because there is this Hari Lilamrita Vacha, because there's this speaking about Krishna, Krishna considered that place to be his own. I mean, Krishna, I mean, what an amazing thing. Oh, Krishna, where is Krishna? Oh, he lives at Seshan Madhavati. So where does Krishna live? Oh, he lives at Kirti Raja in the High Priest. Oh, where does Krishna live? Oh, he lives at, you know, all these different places like this, you know. Why? Because his pastimes are discussed there. This is how Krishna is attracted. Now, in the material sense, you say, wow, that's really egotistical, you know. If you talk about me, I'll come hang out. Oh, you're not going to talk about me? I'm not coming. I mean, we just, from a material point of view, we just shake our head and go, really? But this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the source. Okay, what is it right here? At the end of the last verse there, the poor Prabhupada says, let us therefore obey the Supreme Lord, whose hand is in everything without exception. So Krishna is everywhere. No question mark behind it. Krishna is everywhere. Oh, this is the kind of statement that has an exclamation point behind it. No exception. So the question is, are we embracing Krishna's presence? The question is, are we engaging in conversations to encourage Krishna's presence? If by this we're keeping everything Krishna conscious, the Lord will find great happiness in our home. We look at the deity, and in our mundane vision, we see a form made of wood or brass or stone or whatever. No, they can't go anywhere, you know. But the deity can come and go as they want. We've seen this many times. Shakshi Gopal, famous story. You know, so many different pastimes are there where the deity has appeared to an individual and told them to take me here, put me there. In our Vaishnava history, there's so many examples of this through the associates of Mahaprabhu. And the deity's presence is a result of Krishna's happiness there. Krishna will find bliss. It actually, the verse says just that. entered that house as if it was his very own. I was looking, oh, it must be in the pulpit. Yeah, here in the pulpit. But it says, because he identified it as himself, and therefore he was very happy there, and blissful there. This is the principle that Krishna is drawn to, you know. So this manner will allow us to enthrone, to place Krishna within our home, and we can get the same result as being described here. Krishna will be very satisfied. He'll stay in our home. He'll be very happy. Invite the Vaishnavas over. We have kirtan, we have katha, we do pujas, all these different things. This is all as a goal of establishing Krishna's presence. Now finally, a point mentioned here, one that we all know very well, is that the reason for Vidura leaving home, the external reason, there's always an external and internal reason, the mundane and the spiritual reason behind things, was a family misunderstanding. I like the way this is just minimized, misunderstanding. Prabhupada often said the arguments between husband and wife, between family members, are not so significant. You know, they shouldn't be paid so much attention to. You know, they dissipate. So a family misunderstanding. And here again, not to give too much away because the chapter's coming and we all know the history, you know, very well. But it's noted that this family misunderstanding was not seen as an opportunity to complain, was not seen as an opportunity to fault find, was not seen as an opportunity to divorce or separate or go different directions, but it was seen as an opportunity to embrace a higher spiritual principle, namely to hear from Maitreya Rishi. So he took this great opportunity. Vidura, there was no doubt some troubles there. You know, Duryodhana was not very nice. I mean, let me see, family-wise, he'd be like the nephew, right? So yeah, Duryodhana as the nephew should have been much more respectful to Vidura as his uncle. But he was not very nice. Of course, Duryodhana wasn't a very nice guy anyway. But that being beside itself, I mean, he does have his good qualities there. But the point being, he did not have much of a mood of reverence or respect for Vidura. And this caused a lot of difficulty on numerous occasions for Vidura. So in Vidura's, you know, life story, this was all part of the curse, part of the package. We all know this, I discussed this several classes ago, that, you know, this curse he got from Andaka Muni, and you know, this horrible fate is, you know, Yamaraj, and then, you know, but in the process of all that curse, what did he get beneficial? His attachment to Krishna. And here, that attachment to Krishna manifests itself very, very strongly, that Hari Lila Mrita Vacha, by speaking about Krishna with another devotee, by having that process of Krishna Katha, by, how do I say it here? Drinking the nectar of Krishna Katha. This is the way it should be, you know? Drinking the nectar of Krishna Katha. You get a really good sweet rice. Actually, I remember back when, back on 55th Street, we had, you know, we had very elaborate Shalom Shila worship back then. Seven Shilas, we had a whole incredible throne. Some of you that were present back then know the history, and just amazing. And the worship was very, very elaborate. And every morning, we would bathe them with Panchamrita. Not individual substances, but we blended all together into a 2-quart container of this amazing nectarian, ambrosial, just incredible nectar. And we bathe the deities in that, and then of course it's Charanamrita. I don't know how many of you have finished off 2 quarts of Charanamrita, but it has an effect. It has an effect. So drinking the nectar of Krishna Katha, you know, like drinking the nectar of this Charanamrita. So, and anyway, this is the foundation that this chapter is going to be based on, and this is what Sukadev Goswami is indicating to us, that there will be many discussions coming, not only in how Vidura ended up in this situation, but what was the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. And in this way, the Bhagavatam continues on. All that we have to do is just hitch a ride and go along with it. You know, just embrace it and keep that presence of Krishna there in our life, and then everything will be perfect. So we'll finish there. Anybody's got any questions, comments, corrections, chastisements? Akuranath, my old brahmachari buddy. We could say she first.
Just a quick question. What was the conversation of the group of pujaris in New York after finishing off that quart of nectar?
Say that again, I'm sorry. I just adjusted my hearing so I can hear better.
Just asking, but what was the conversation amongst the pujaris who just finished off that quart of nectar?
First of all, it was two quarts. Second of all, I don't know that there was a conversation. There was a lot of laying around and eyes rolling. And all those young fired up brahmacharis, they're all in white now.
I wanted to get clear on the sequence because we know Duryodhana left, Vidura left Hastinapur when he was insulted by Duryodhana. Mm. Then he came back when the Pandavas were now residing there after the war to get Dhritarashtra out. And when did he go see Maitreya? I think because this verse is talking about how would he leave the house of the Pandavas where Krishna identified as his own self. And so it seems like it's talking about the second, like he met Maitreya after he went back and preached to Dhritarashtra.
Good question. Nagaraj and I were discussing this, he and I, before I started prepping for this class, we were discussing who's asking what from whom, because it's a little, if you don't look at it very carefully, it's a little gray who's putting the question out and who's not. I would be guessing if I gave you a clear answer, which I don't have at my fingertips, maybe someone else in the Pondarik will maybe,
I mean, I'm thinking it's after, I think he went and saw Maitreya after he spoke to Dhritarashtra because Krishna didn't leave the planet until sometime thereafter, and Krishna spoke to Uddhava around the time that Vidura spoke to Maitreya.
Sure. And we know that Vidura embraced this renunciation at that point, so once you embrace renunciation, going back to, I'm going back to the high life again, generally isn't the way it goes, you know, so, yeah, a little more study on that point to answer it properly. Anyone else? Jitari Guru?
Hare Krishna. There was two words that Prabhupada said in the purports there that just kind of like, wow, like one of them was rubbish. I thought, wow, that was like really characteristic. Uh-huh. And then I think he used the word sane. Was it sane or saner, you know? Now, somewhere or other, that's like, wow, that, you know, I find that Prabhupada's grasp of society and the English language and everything is just so, it's got such an amazing character, you know.
Insightful.
You can't get it anywhere else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Depth and insightful. I was discussing here again with a group of devotees the other day. I never heard the word phantasmagoria until I came in contact with Srila Prabhupada. But it so describes the situation that he uses it for, phantasmagoria. Yeah.
Just thinking about Vidura, person as his, like you were talking about him, it describes that he left his bow. I think Pushkar Prabhu was talking about painting, so nicely described. He left his bow when he left the palace for his... He was a minister, yeah? Just wondering, why did he carry a bow? I mean...
Well, he was a Kshatriya. He was born in a Kshatriya family. Why do... I always have these fancy, you know, pulsi beads because, you know, it's part of, you know, the Brahmin kind of life, you know. So there are certain acronyms that one has according to their position. You know, the two of you, I'm quite shocked this morning. You usually have a cloth out there with flowers and needles making garlands, and you're not doing this morning. You threw my whole thing off. So you know, certain certain identities. You know, so he was in a palace. He was a Kshatriya. He was probably, you know, associating with all of them. You know, and we don't have any direct indication that possibly he was taking part in martial arts training and all. So, yeah, having a bow and, all right, I'm done with that life now. I'm going to renounce. You know, that was, if nothing else, it was the external symbolic representation of I'm done. You know? All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to the Vaishnavas.